Between life and death, there is a library. And within that library, the shelves go on forever. Every book provides a chance to try another life you could have lived, to see how things would be if you had made other choices. Would you have done anything different if you had the chance to undo your regrets?
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a new podcast bringing you the updates you really want on whether or not you should take the time to read that book your friend sent you on TikTok. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. We're just young professionals who met in Kansas City and missed each other, so we started a book podcast.
We all used to work together in TV news, but they both moved away from me, so we had to find a way to continue our little book club, but now we're doing it virtually, and we decided to bring you guys in.
Yeah, so each episode, we'll give you our initial reviews before hitting the part of the podcast containing deeper analysis. You should only listen to it if you already read the book, because there's going to be spoilers.
And we're busy girls. We're young professionals. So, you know, one of us may not be available one time, and they may not come out in a super timely manner. But the whole point is we're reading the book, so you don't have to waste your time reading it if you don't want to.
And we'll give our busy girls blunt opinions and our ratings on how we feel you should spend your time reading.
So for our first episode, we're going to tackle a book that's been really popular over the past year. Trigger warning, the book is about suicide. It's The Midnight Library by Matt Haig.
So basically this book is about Nora, who commits suicide at the beginning of the book because she feels like her life is going nowhere. She's 35 and she's been fired from her job. Her cat has died and she just really doesn't see a future. So she commits suicide. But in that between that life after death is a library where she gets to relive all of the regrets she had. So what if she made this decision over another decision? And then the events unfold from there. That's my no spoiler summary.
That was great. I think you nailed it.
So the first things first, we each went to the internet and found some reviews. Some are funny, some we think are accurate. And we just wanted to share with you some other people's opinions before we gave you our own. So I'm going to start. I found a hilarious Goodreads review. This is from Goodreads user Emma, gave it 3 stars. She said, okay, picture this. You are about to bite into a cookie, a big warm cookie, kind of crispy on the outside, chewy on the inside, yummy and chocolate chippy, and presumably made with brown butter and flaky sea salt, as all the best cookies are. And then you take a big old chomp and, oh no, not a chocolate chip at all. This cookie is filled with raisins. Have you immersed yourself in that experience? Really felt the high expectations and the all-consuming disappointment? Good, because that was my experience with this book. She goes on to say that's not a bad book, but just like a raisin cookie, it's just like not what you expect. It's still fine. And I thought that was like, I don't know. I thought it was a beautiful way to describe her feelings.
That is
harsh.
It's harsh, but it's like the perfect analogy of like an experience you had with like a book that disappoints you. But also yeah. Like I'm stuck on the flaky sea salt. Is there such a thing?
These yes, are fancy never, cookies, so I understand why she might have been. Yeah.
No. Yeah, I have had those little sea salt flakes. You're not living. You need to try some of these fancy cookies.
Obviously, I'm not living. Okay. Off topic, but sure.
Well, I can go next. I also found a really negative one, which is funny because I did like the book. But I really liked what this person had to say, and I kind of agreed with it still. So this is off of Google. It's a 1-star review. She said, this is a children's book, but I wouldn't give it to a child because it teaches that attempting suicide is a fun way to reevaluate your life choices. Oh. And it does that in a really trite way without exploring the full potential of the alternative universes theory on which the book is based. I may never read another New York Times bestseller again if this is what they're promoting.
I wish you guys could have seen Catherine and I's eyebrows pop up at that first sentence.
Yeah,
I was like, oh girl. But okay, I'll just go into it for a second why I kind of agreed with it. I do feel like it's a children's book for adults, but I didn't think it was a bad thing the way this person did. Okay, that's my comment for you.
Because not every adult book needs to be like adult
Exactly.
That makes any sense.
Like, I had fun with like the fairy tale-ness of it.
Yeah. I love fantasy. Does that make
I
me
mean,
a child?
I never thought of this as a children's book, so I don't know where that lady got that, but.
All right. Well, Catherine, do you have a review?
Yeah. So I found this 1-star review on Amazon. I don't know the person's name. Negative. Oh, yeah.
It's, hey, mine was 3. Mine was 3 stars.
Okay. But they roasted the book.
I purposely went to the 1 stars because they're just funny to read. It's not really what I feel about the book. But this book was so odd. And not in a quirky, new, this is different way, but in a, I have truly no idea how to feel about this way. And have you ever had that feeling where it's just like people say like something's quirky and different and it's, that's a good thing. But then you look at it and it's like, this is just weird. I don't feel that way about this book, but I definitely have had this feeling before. So yeah. I get what he's saying. And it's not for everyone. This book is not for everyone.
I'll say too, going off these reviews, so both of y'all's have kind of mentioned like it not being what they expected. And I found that like a really interesting critique because personally the book was like exactly what I expected. Yeah. And a lot of reviews I also saw were about the book being too predictable. So I'm like, how did you not expect with the book? Like how
I will say I feel like I predicted the ending. I just feel like there were some curveballs in there, which we'll get into later, but like the quantum physics part of things, stuff like that, that I was like, what? Well,
that's not a curveball. Like that's the mythology behind it, which I guess we'll get into, but I didn't personally think that gave any value to the book, but I thought it was pretty predictable. Like I think I predicted pretty much everything in it, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing in this book.
No.
Yeah. Like I enjoyed it, but these people are saying like, the book wasn't what they expected. I'm like, how?
I feel like it's exactly what I expected.
Yeah. Oh. We gave you kind of negative reviews, but overall Goodreads users give the book a 4.4 out of 5 stars, 4.04, my bad. And Amazon users give the book a 4.3 out of 5. Mm. And I feel like I was pretty on par with that. My Goodreads review was a 3.
Yeah, I probably would have gone 3.5 if you could do decimals.
Right, same.
I would give 4. I really liked it, but I don't think it's perfect, so I'm not going to give it a 5. I'm pretty stingy with my 5s.
Yeah, but so a pretty well-liked book in general.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the comments I saw were something I agreed with. They critiqued the main character, Nora. So did you guys find Nora compelling or... could Nora have improved the book with her personality?
I will say this about Nora. I did find her a little bit boring. There is also an aspect of the novel, which I found her relatable to, though. Like, she was, like, a very normal person, which I liked. The part about her that I didn't like is that there are all these, like, fantastical realms that she could have existed in that were all crazy, like, I don't know. Are we in the spoilers part of the episode? Can there be spoilers now? I don't.
No.
Spoilers. Okay. Anyway, some of the lives that she could have lived were like very extraordinary. And I was like, that's almost, I was like, how could one person have like done all these different things, like to the fullest extent of like humanity? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she didn't win a gold medal, but like some of her lives, there were like 4 of them that were like the equivalent of like winning a gold medal in a specific field. And I was like,
Right. Yeah. Like butterfly effect to the extreme.
Yeah. Like she was too successful in some of the lives and it made her as a character less relatable almost.
Yeah. I was like, how many people can do all this stuff?
Yeah. I noticed some of the reviews when they looked at Nora, they felt like she was too like whiny or didn't believe her disorder or believe her mental state. I thought she was very relatable, but I also related really heavily to her because like I was a teenage swimmer. I have anxiety. So it's just like very, very close to home almost. It's not, I've never been suicidal. I'll disclaimer that. And I can't totally validate her experience. Like I don't know her experience as much besides reading it and what was going in behind the scenes of writing it. But like, there's this one line that I have to read that's so good. It's like, you're overthinking it. I have anxiety. I have no other type of thinking available. Like, that is just the perfect line. And I've never seen it. I've never seen anxiety like portrayed really in a good way.
Right. I think the way she almost comes off kind of boring and plain, it's because they want you to experience how stuck she feels in her life. And that's why she has come to the conclusion that she needs to end her life. And yeah, mm-hmm. she is kind of a flat character, but that's because her life is flat and she's trying to end it. So,
yeah.
You know, I go back and forth. I'm like, she was kind of flat, but she's supposed to be, so you understand her despair.
And it's interesting. And I would like to hear y'all's opinion. It's so a lot of books, it's either plot driven or character driven. I feel like this is supposed to be character driven, but a lot of it is plot driven. If that makes any sense. What do y'all think?
I think you're right. Cause I feel like Nora almost changes in every reality she lives to an extent, not like completely, but I think the plot dictates her, you know, how she's living her life.
And the plot changes her. It's not like she changes and that changes the plot. It's like she's sort of at the whim of the library. So, but I get what you're getting at though, because it's like a very like heady sort of like philosophy and thinking book. So it feels literature-y, but it still feels like a plot driven book though.
Mm-hmm. But it's focused on a main character that needs to adapt and change. It's just a weird situation almost, which is fun. It's a good way of doing it.
So we looked at the character, but how did you guys find the pacing of the book? Like, this is a relatively short book, but with a lot of like deep thought in it. So how long did it take you guys to read, and was the pace good?
I think it took me like 3 or 4 days to read, but I honestly could have knocked it out in a day. Like, for me, the pacing was great. I wouldn't say it was fast paced, but there was always something interesting happening. So I always felt like turning the page and reading more. There was never a moment that I thought was boring, really.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I read it in a day. If not a day, I read it in a night plus a day. So it's a very fast paced novel and it's pretty short, which honestly, I felt like it probably could have been longer, at least in my opinion. But I also read longer novels.
Yeah, we're all Sarah J. Maas stands over here, so we read 800 pagers on the reg
and 16 of them.
Yeah,
I was surprised when I picked it up. You know, I heard all the hype about this book, and when I picked it up and saw how thin it was, I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, I think the pace was great, and I think, yeah, there was a lot to think about reading it, but I think I did most of my like deep thought after I finished it, like mm-hmm. more of a reflection on the book. So you didn't have to like stop and digest a whole lot of philosophy.
Okay. But my favorite question, can you see it becoming a movie or a TV show? And the answer is clearly yes. In this book, I think it would so easily lend itself to either a movie or a TV show.
I think it'd be a better movie.
See, I think TV show, and you can put a different character in the library each season, you know?
Period. I would.
Different life every episode.
I did not think of that.
Yeah, I would watch that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's so much rotation and like the different lives, like every episode could be a different life. And, you know, I love that idea, Caitlin. I would fund that show. So
yeah, it's actually kind of a lot like Love Story on HBO Max, which is similar, where it's like a different love interest in their love story season to season.
Well, we actually read this for a book club that we were in before my two friends moved to other states. And one of the things we like to do in the book club is rate the books. So we kind of talked about our star rating at the beginning, but we also love to talk about like memorable characters or lines that stuck with us after reading the book. So to start, my favorite character was Mrs. Elm, the librarian. I loved her, and how you'd picture her as kind of like, oh, a sweet little librarian, but she was kind of like a spicy character, and she kept me on my toes. So I really enjoyed the interjections of Mrs. Elm.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I also really liked Mrs. Elm. I think that Mrs. Elm was one of the more unexpected aspects of the book. Because again, we all liked it, but all of our critiques have also kind of been that it was a little predictable. But Mrs. Elm definitely was, like, she was kind of sassy. Like, she was giving advice, but in like a very tough love fashion, which was a little unexpected. And so I really appreciated that as well.
Yeah. Sorry for all of you listening. My cat is now walking past my microphone and on my shoulders. My favorite character, I mean, Voltaire, the cat, is just, I love animals. So I'm always going to stand the animals. But I also loved Ash. Like, he's just such a good, good guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a perfect relationship almost. And I love healthy relationships. So I'll always stand a healthy relationship.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, before you start spoiling things.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's give our busy girl rating before we get to the spoiler alerts. And then you can talk more about Ash.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are a busy young professional who's been hyped up over this book, would you say people should take a lot of time to read it? Or like, how do you fit into your schedule? What's the move?
I would definitely recommend reading it. If I had to rate it like out of five, like a busy girl, a five, even though the book was like a 3.5 for me, I think for a busy person, it's a 5 just because the pacing is great. It's short. You can knock it out so quickly. And it is a good book. It's not a book that you finish and feel like you wasted your time, at least in my opinion. So I think in a time crunch, it delivers.
Yeah. It's like a nighttime read. Like, you can read it at night and then maybe on a plane, if you're traveling, it's a great travel book.
I saw a review online that said this is a great book to read while waiting for the train, and I would agree. And I think if you're an audiobook girl, this is a great commute book too.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Okay, now Catherine, we can get to your spoilers.
Yes. So spoiler alert, I guess we need to mention that. So we're about to dive deeper into the book, and there will be major spoilers coming up. So if you haven't read it, I would stop listening now, read it, and come back.
I will just start this off because you just mentioned Ash. And this is one of the hot points of the book, I think, for me, is that she did not end up with Ash. Because I understand completely why she did not continue living the life that she was in with him, because it felt like stolen and it wasn't really her. It was like this other version of her. But she should have pursued him. She should have come back for him and pursued him in her home life. There was no reason she couldn't do that. I'm so disappointed.
Like, he leaves the door open for that because, like, she sees him when she's going to, like, out of the hospital. Mm-hmm. Because she lives. That's the spoiler. She does live. She chooses her original life because she realizes that's the only life that's worth living, and she finds new meaning to her life. And so she leaves this door open. The author leaves the door open for her to meet Ash again and reconnect. But I really wanted him to just, they bump into each other at the hospital, like a good meet cute 2.0.
Yes.
Yeah. I need Molly to exist. So yes. I agree. I was kind of devastated that Ash didn't seem like he really ended up in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. But also just kind of generally, what was your favorite thing and least favorite thing about the book?
I did not like the quantum physics. I know we mentioned it earlier, but if a book is going to be truly fantasy, I don't need an explanation grounded in reality. Like, it can just be a thing, especially when you're talking about like life after death. No one knows what that's like. So you could literally just make anything up. So yeah, without that explanation, I would have been perfectly fine in the book, but I just felt like it detracted.
Right. And kind of going off of that, Miley's favorite was the other character who was jumping through lives, who she ran into. I don't understand how they would find each other. And he was the one that introduced the quantum physics parts of things. But he was kind of grating because he couldn't pick one life, and he had been doing that for so long. And I was just kind of put off by him and what he was encouraging Nora to do, which I get that, like, it was introducing the idea that everybody's library looks different and everybody's Mrs. Elm is different, but I could have done without that guy.
I agree. Just to explain for people in case they don't remember, don't know, the book up until like a certain point is just kind of like unexplained, like this is just happening. And then they introduce this male character who intersects with Nora in like a handful of her lives. And then they kind of explain like science behind it and like get into these theories of like why it's happening. And if it's like God or if it's just like physics. And then this guy that she meets has never stopped going through lives. Like he's never decided to pick one and he's never decided to go back to his home life. And so I co-sign everything that you two have said. I really hated that he was there. It was kind of weird because they had a romance, but I did not find him likable at all. Like I did not feel the chemistry between them. And so I found it strange that he was this person who showed up more than once. Like it, cause that feels almost fated. Like they're being brought together and they had a romance in more than one life. And I'm like, why this shitty guy? Why? Mm-hmm. Let's go back to Ash. Let's go back to Ash's yeah. turn.
Well, it just feels like a million to one chance that they would find each other as they're both hopping through lives. Like that just seems so improbable.
Well, and he said he had met other people too who were yeah. hopping through lives. Yeah. And I just, and like, so Nora's library almost had like a timeline. Like she'd go back and it would be unstable. And I don't understand how he just kept going. I don't think we're supposed to understand, but it just was like, okay.
Cause like it would. Like- Oh, it would make sense if they were to, if he was also experiencing like this limbo where he didn't know if he wanted to live and still had to experience it. But yeah, it did seem like he was just constantly in limbo.
Yeah. His choice was just to keep trying lives.
Yeah.
And that I feel like wasn't an option for Nora.
And I was like, cause again, he did like find all these other people. I was like, how many people in the same social circles have near-death experiences where they're time hopping and all happen to know each other? That would be like if seven people that you met or could have met were all dying at the same time. That just seems crazy. And that you would figure it out. I'm like,
well, yeah, like you look different. Are you hopping through lives? Like, how do you even, I don't know.
You look a little confused. Do you really belong here? Or are you on your deathbed time hopping through alternate realities? Like, that's just crazy.
Yeah,
it's a pickup line.
Yeah, it is a pickup line. And to kind of explain that, because like for people who need a refresher on the book, the Midnight Library doesn't go back in time to when you made the choice. It starts from the exact moment when she committed suicide. It's like midnight on that day when she's 35 and what would continue after that. And so in order for Hugo to meet her at the same time as her, he would have had to have the near-death experience around the same time of that midnight timeline, or have stayed in the life long enough to meet her.
So I'm not sure, because like on the boat he was already there, you know.
Yeah, so he could have been on the boat for longer, like, so it could have been a couple of days or a couple of weeks that he stayed in this life, but he would have had to have the near-death experience within the timeline of choosing to stay.
See, this is what just made me not like the quantum physics part, because I'm already confused again. So
it is confusing. Okay. You have to read it.
My second least favorite thing is that when they popped into these lives, they had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't like that, because other time hopping books that I've read before had it more like you inherit that person's mentality. So you're kind of, even though you have your consciousness, you kind of understand what's going on and like where you are and who everyone is, which I like, because I feel like it allows characters to then like actually figure out if they like the life or not. I was like, how could you appreciate any of these lives? Because you're so busy being stressed out about what the fuck is going on. Like, and one of the scenes when she's about to get on stage and have to give a speech, I was like, of course she doesn't like the life. She has to give a speech she doesn't even know. She doesn't remember. Like, I wish that they inherited some knowledge that they could like use in the life. I just personally did not like that aspect.
But isn't that kind of like a point of the novel, where it's just like, so you don't choose to stay in that life, where it's just like you have to learn the information? But
that's, to me, that's a cop out, because like if you were more comfortable, like if you had the knowledge and that would have made you choose the life, then like you didn't really learn anything about your present life, you know, like you just didn't like them because you were confused.
I do see both sides. Also, side note, I guess we're officially PG-13 because Casey dropped her first F-bomb. So, oops.
I can't not say the F word. That is just against my ethics.
You'll learn over the course of this podcast. All of us have our moments. And I would probably say Casey and I are the biggest offenders of dropping curse words. Caitlin is a precious angel.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure well, it's Angel, but her mom definitely washed her mouth out with soap or something, because we did not learn whatever lesson she learned.
That did happen once. Well, on a lighter note, since we just dropped a lot of hate on some of the plot, one of my favorite things was honestly the storyline where she got to meet up with her ex-fiance. Mm-hmm. Even though he sucked, she got to know like that was a emotionally abusive relationship that she avoided. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it just made me really happy that she got that regret out of the way and knew that like she would have been miserable despite living the dream they had together. Like it wasn't with the right person. So I really enjoyed like the redemptive arc right there.
I do too. My favorite part is like kind of like a spinning off of that, where I really liked that she almost had this like list of regrets. And in like the first part of the book, she thinks about it a lot. So like one of the things she thinks about a lot is this like ex-fiance. But she also has the cat, which comes up a lot. And like not following her dream when she was a kid to like be a glaciologist, however you say that word. And so you already kind of like have these regrets. And I really enjoyed like kind of slowly watching the book tick them off the list as she realizes like it's not like all she dreamed of. And that just like that like going down and like you realize like as her mindset slowly shifts as she like ticks off one thing by one thing, I like really liked getting to watch that change.
Yeah, the Book of Regrets was just a great plot device. Like that was just such a good idea of it like slowly decreasing in size. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that brings me to like my favorite part, which is just the whole concept of this book. Like, where did Matt Haig come up with this idea? Like, I would have never thought about this in like the between life and going back on your regrets. Cause I think everyone can relate to having a regret where they wish they had made a different choice and wanted to see how it turned out, because that's just not how you, that's not how life works. So just this entire concept of going back and seeing like, oh, like this is how it would have turned out. Would I have been better? Probably not. Like it's still the same life almost. So like the whole concept is just like, well done. That's just so cool.
Yeah.
I love the Book of Regrets. I'm just curious because like we learned with Hugo that not everybody's like midnight library is a library. Like his was, I think, a video store. Mm-hmm. So like what was his Book of Regrets? Did he have to like watch them all like
oh my gosh,
like movie titles?
Yeah,
I don't know, but
a pamphlet.
I think I related to the bookishness of everything, like mm-hmm. that was a really good metaphor.
Yeah, it was. I also did like it in the context of like depression, because I do feel like a lot of people who are depressed like have these like thoughts they can't get rid of, that like they've messed things up or they've done badly, or like, you know, like very like harsh self-critique. And so I liked getting to see, you know, someone just kind of bring life to the idea that your life would be different, but it probably wouldn't be better. Like you can move on.
Well, it's also all of her regrets were stemming from what other people wanted from her, not necessarily what she wanted for herself, which I feel like a lot of people who struggle with mental health issues can relate, where they rely heavily on what other people think of them and not necessarily what they want or need. So I definitely liked how deep the book was about that.
Yeah. So do you think Nora was more just disappointed in herself, or disappointed that she couldn't live up to other people's expectations? Because I think there's a difference between just kind of like hating yourself and then like putting other people's hopes and dreams on your shoulders.
I think she was disappointed that of disappointing other people, but I also think she didn't have a lot of love. And that was kind of the main point of like, she didn't surround herself with a lot of people who loved her, which was to no fault of her own in some cases. So she just needed a lot more support than what she had originally. And she really felt like she had disappointed all the people in her life. And that's what kind of caused her to spiral.
So did it end the way you guys thought it would? Which life did you root for the most? which we kind of already talked about, but we'll do it again.
I mean, Ash, just great. I wish she had stayed in it, but I totally understand why she didn't. And yeah, I predicted the ending, but surprisingly, I liked that I predicted the ending. I think that's what I needed out of this book, because it's such a sad and heavy topic that you want the predictability of that happy ending and the normalcy of it, I guess, is like, it's a fantastical novel, but it ends like pretty normal and like moving on with like her mundane life, but she's making it better and making it a better place. Like, I just, I liked that it was predictable, surprisingly.
Yeah, because I mean, what if she actually like committed suicide successfully, or what if she had picked a different life? Like, what would that even say? It would be like the worst message ever. Like,
mm-hmm. Right. I mean, there wouldn't be a book if she successfully committed suicide. And you know, I was the same way. Like, I predicted the end, and I was kind of like, ah, oh, bummer, because there were some cool stuff she could have done. But I agree that like, you predict it because you want the outcome to be that you're already living your perfect life. Like, you're putting yourself in Nora's shoes, and you're hoping that none of your regrets are holding you back, that you're right where you should be.
Ooh, yeah, well said.
But I was rooting for glaciologist Nora, just because I thought that was like the most random career choice ever, and I don't know how he chose that, but I just thought it was funny. So
I thought the polar bear scene was funny.
Yeah. So I was like, that's an interesting one. Okay.
I actually, this is probably an unpopular opinion, I actually liked the life where she was a successful swimmer and then became a public speaker. I was like, okay, but that would be really cool. And you're rich, and I know money doesn't buy happiness, but like, just think of like all the stuff you could do and all the cool places you could go. Like, maybe that would be like closer to my dream of like having the opportunity to travel everywhere and like be a speaker. But it obviously wasn't right for her. But I was like, damn, they couldn't make her happier in this one. I kind of wanted to like see this one through.
Yeah, but her dad cheated on her mom, and her mom died of alcoholism, and her which accelerated her disease. Like, that was not great.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it was great for her, just not for everybody else. Like, the caveat to each of these lives that like, okay, it may rock for her, but like, oh, her brother's like missing from her life, or her mom's dead, or whatever.
Yeah, which I guess is part of why I also like was just sad it couldn't go farther, because I was like, well, it wasn't what she was doing, it was like these reverberations around her, which were like too important to ignore. Yeah, it did end the way I thought I would, but I also, same as y'all, liked the ending.
So, speaking of endings, sort of, did this get you thinking about what would be your Midnight Library? Who would be your Mrs. Elm? Like, that got me thinking. I'm not sure I've totally landed on an answer, but I loved pondering that part of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's one of the best parts of this book, is that like, it's so easily relatable to everyone, and it kind of inherently makes you think. Like, I know for me, like, obviously I thought about myself, but I also thought about my little sister, who is at this point in her life where she doesn't really know what she wants to do, and is like really confused. And I think she feels like whatever she does, she's making a wrong choice. And so I'm like, you need to read this book, because, you know, it's so relatable to just like, you know, get over this like barrier of choice of like always thinking that like another option is better.
Yeah. I've been pondering it too, and it took me a while, but I think my Midnight Library wouldn't be a library, but it would be a car on a highway, and the exits would be the different choices, like a road trip or traveling.
Okay.
I don't know who my Mrs. Elm would be, though. I don't want to say my mom, because I think that's too close.
Yeah.
I think you need someone that's a little farther removed, but I can't think of anyone that's made like an impact that isn't like close to me, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. I think I land like the closest I could get to what I would think of is like a photo gallery, where like the photos are snapshots of your life, and like the gallery can change around. And like, I don't know if it's photos, I guess maybe, you know, maybe Mark Mujinojos is my Mrs. Elm, you know, our beloved photography teacher from college, who is not with us anymore, but he taught me everything I knew about photos. So that could be a, we called him Uncle Mark, you know, it would be, that would be endearing, I guess.
Yeah. That would be a good one.
Yeah. I guess I'm boring. I can't think of anything that mine would be other than a library. Like that's the only thing I spent any time doing when I was like a kid. But I do also think that, the person that it would be would probably be, because I had some teachers I was really close to when I was in elementary school, but I also had some soccer coaches, and that makes me wonder, like, because soccer was a big part of my life when I was a kid, I'm like, how do we work in sports to this? Like, how could it be soccer? Like, every time you line up like a different set of soccer balls and the goals are all different or something, like, I don't know.
Yeah, like a soccer play or something.
Yeah. You got to pass to a different teammate every time.
Yeah.
Play a different game.
Infinite yeah. ways to play a soccer game. So. Mm-hmm.
Facts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So the cat. Obviously, Catherine is invested in this question. It died and she couldn't change it. But she found out that she ended up giving it the best life it could have had in her home life. So did you guys find it hard to stomach things that were out of control of change, that were always the same? Or how did you feel about that part?
It was too close to real life. If that makes any sense. I hate when animals die. I cry every time. I bawled my eyes out when he died. And I think while it's a great plot device and it's a great way of explaining how like you can't control everything, and I think that's very true to real life and it's perfect for this book, I don't like it personally because I really want to control all the aspects of my life. And maybe that's me being type A control freak, but it's, right. it's it was, great.
It was frustrating and it was supposed to be frustrating. But you still felt the frustration. And like, I have two cats myself, and it also made me very sad. Did I cry? No, Catherine's our bleeding heart in this group. But yeah, it made me sad to think that, like, I mean, it was a good way to depict that despite what might be best for you and what choices you make, other people have their own trajectories and have their own choices to make and regrets to have. And you're just not going to change that for the most part, as my cat's like screaming out the window right now.
I hear it.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I really liked it, just because, but maybe that's just part of me, is like, I like knowing that like you can only try your best, and that doesn't mean that you're always going to get like the best result that you want. Like, you can try your best and your cat can still die, but that's better to me than like, if you tried harder, your cat wouldn't have died. To me, that's more depressing. And so I kind of liked that I also liked that she got to know that she did the best possible. Like, I think that was like a good lesson for her, because that was like something she was really sad about. And I liked that, not that she was happy she made her cat die, but she could at least be happy that like, she knew that she did care for it and love for it as good as she like wanted to have been able to.
Yeah, I agree. So kind of, you know, talking about the emotions behind reading the book and thinking through the book, would you recommend this book to someone who is struggling with their mental health?
I do think this would be a tough book to read, because there are like dark moments in the book. I mean, she is in the midst of like committing suicide in the first few chapters. So I don't know that I would like love to give those parts to someone who is struggling, but overall, I think it's like a very helpful tool for reflection and for thinking about the value of life. And so I would give it to my sister who has been struggling. Not in all the same ways, but I think that there's a lot of benefit to giving it to someone who's struggling.
Yeah. I probably wouldn't give it to someone who's struggling with like depression, suicide, is in the throes of it, but someone who is actively seeking help and trying to get out of it, I think this would be a really good reflection book, like Casey said. I think it's really good about reflecting on your own regrets in your own life and really taking a good look back to see how your life does matter, I guess. But I don't know if I would give it to a person who's truly dealing with like a really intense bout of depression.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Like, I think the message is really important for someone who's maybe in that spot, but giving them a book's not the way to do that. That's just kind of like, here's a Band-Aid, good luck, you know. Like, yeah. But I think, like, I would recommend it for people who are just maybe anxious or in a state of change. But I think the biggest takeaway is maybe, you know, if you know someone who's struggling in that sort of area, you have this message now with you, and you can maybe apply that to your own life and kind of help them through, you know, not with a fictional character, but I feel like it's a good resource for people who are trying to understand what that person's going through.
Yeah. I think the author does a really, really good job of getting into the psyche of a person struggling with anxiety and depression. And the reason why is because he himself struggled with anxiety and depression. So he actually wrote another book called Reasons to Stay Alive, and it's about his own personal experience dealing with suicidal thoughts. So he was 24 years old, and it's the reason to stay alive is a true story about how he came through that crisis and triumphed over his depression. So I guess that's kind of a reflection of why it's so accurate of a book. Did you guys know about this prior to me saying it?
I knew about the titles of some of his books, but I hadn't read any, so I didn't know like the premise, you know?
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah. I think that's really cool that, I mean, that's probably why he can talk so accurately, especially it's interesting because he's a man writing a really complex female character, which I don't think we've talked about, but it's really kind of props to him because I feel like a lot of men don't dive deep into like the female psyche and like write these really complex female characters. So
I also feel though that like anyone could picture themselves as Nora because she is kind of this, I used the word flat earlier, but she's like basic enough that I think a man could picture himself in that position. But you're right, I don't know where Nora came from out of the author's head. Like, that was a very interesting choice to almost tell his own personal reflection through the eyes of a woman.
Yeah, that's interesting. But I will say, I know I thought the book felt very grounded and real the whole time. And nothing ever felt over dramatic or like over sensationalized. It all felt very like grounded, even when she was like flitting through lives. And so, you know, his own mental health struggles, I'm sure, like definitely helped him write like very realistic and like, you know, easy to empathize with, like reflections on her mental state.
I guess to sum it all up, you know, this was a very clever book to put you in the headspace of thinking through your mental health and taking stock of your life and realizing that you're right where you're supposed to be. And that's sometimes hard to, you know, hard to get in that headspace. You know, everyone has bad days, but this was a very clever way to tell the story of like a mental health struggle. And overall, like I said, I enjoyed it. I would give it like a 3.5 just because there were a few things I found confusing or lacking, but overall, like, I enjoyed the story and would recommend this book.
Well, I think we're ready to wrap it up. So these are just our opinions. So you can disagree. That's fine. We hope you disagree. We don't want anyone just listening to us and not having their own thoughts. That's what makes books fun, is that it's different for everyone. So if you want to join in on our conversation, Busy Girls Pod is our name on almost all social media platforms except for Goodreads, where it is Busy Girls Book Club Podcast.
Yes, and that's a discussion group. So you can hop in, join us in that. Let's discuss.
Yeah, we want all the hot takes.
We want you to completely disagree with us so we can have some good debate back and forth. I feel like us three are pretty similar in personality types, so we'll agree a lot of the time. So we definitely need someone to come in and fight us.
Right. And we want you to find your tribe. Like, we're busy young professionals. We are sure you are too. If you're listening to podcasts, you're probably on the move like us. And so join our discussion, find your people, join our Busy Girls Book Club. And we have a few episodes lined up that we're ready to tackle, but we also want to hear what books that you have been noticing are really popular, your friends are telling you to read, and maybe you just like don't know if you have the time to read it or skeptical about, you know, is this overhyped? So let us know if there's a book you want us to tackle. You can email us at busygirlspod@gmail.com or connect with us on any of our social platforms, like Casey said, at busygirlspod. And let us know. I mean, we're ready to, when we have time, read what you want to read.
So we'll see.
So yeah, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine.
Thanks for listening. And when you get the chance, take a break with Busy Girls Book Club. Mm-hmm.